I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
6:43, Dr. Kevin Most joins us now, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day on Saturday. Thanks to the very generous Jimmy DeCastro, we had our green jacket open. And I was in a golf cart with Larry Wirt, who's a friend of yours as well, Doc.
Yeah.
And he said very nice things about you.
Larry's a wonderful person.
He said his favorite part of this segment is John DeCosta's opening theme.
Yeah. Larry has good judgment and character, too. He said nice things about me?
Yeah, really did. Yeah, he did. Yes, he did. I hope you had a good weekend.
I did. I did. It was, you know, the weather, just like the perfect weather now. This is the time you get out. Even though fall allergies are kicking in, still get outside now where the temperature's reasonable and it's nice. Get some exercise.
Yeah, and get it while you can. Yeah. Sadly, we lost Paul Green on Saturday. Paul Green died from the effects of an aortic aneurysm. We're going to tell some Paul Green stories and have Spike Odell and Rick Pearson after 7. But the medical side of this, anytime somebody that is a celebrity or a celebrity status dies, we can learn from whatever they've gone through, and I think that's a fair legacy. And Paul Green, I'm sure, would appreciate the discussion. An aortic aneurysm, what is it?
Yeah, and Paul, a wonderful person. I had the opportunity to meet him with Spike, and he's just an unfortunate loss because he was a great guy.
Yeah.
So we know about aneurysms in the brain, and essentially an aneurysm is a weakening of the artery. So the artery gets a little bubble in it where it's supposed to be nice and strong. It gets the area that's weak. So we have arteries all over our system. The aortic aneurysm and the aortic abdominal aneurysm is the biggest tube that leads and brings blood to the rest of our body from the heart. And what happens there is often, sometimes it's found incidentally, someone has abdominal pain, we do a CAT scan and we notice that there's an aneurysm. And some of them, when they're small, we can just monitor them. And then if it gets to be a little bit bigger as it grows, then we will go in and do surgery, or we'll do something called endovascular surgery, where we'll put essentially a stent in there to protect that from rupturing. There's people that get acute abdominal aortic aneurysms, and they often will present with lowering of blood pressure, excruciating pain, and back pain. And what's happening there is essentially that aorta is rupturing. And unless there's a surgeon in the emergency room at the time, surgery there is almost it's very difficult. Once that ruptures, the chance of survival is very low.
Am I remembering this right? Isn't that what killed John Ritter?
I believe it was, actually. Yeah. You're right. Yep. So, you know, for people, you know, it's not like you're going to say, oh, go get checked for an aneurysm. But, you know, if you have abdominal pain and incidentally they notice it, then make sure you do follow up with a vascular surgeon, because some of them are so small that we'll just monitor them. And then the other person, if you have that bad excruciating back pain, get into the emergency room. Let somebody take a look at you, because it can be life-saving.
We'll get traffic here in a second, and then we're going to talk about what walking pneumonia is and Hillary Clinton's health relative to the campaign. And then before we go, someone on staff has a severe eye twitch, so we can't have that. Dr. Kevin Most. All right, we got a bunch of stuff to cover and no time to cover it, Doc. So let's talk about what walking pneumonia is.
So walking pneumonia, there's essentially two spectrums of walking pneumonia. One is the one that we classically use as physicians, and that's one caused by a bacteria, an organism called mycoplasma. Those individuals, highly contagious, it's usually a dry cough. One that is kind of self-limiting. It'll go away if you don't get treated, but if we treat it, it'll go away a little bit quicker. So there's that, and then there's also people that say, oh, I had walking pneumonia, meaning I had pneumonia, but I wasn't sick enough to be in the hospital, so the doctor put me on antibiotics, and he said, go ahead and do what you normally do.
And based on what we know of what Secretary Clinton went through for the weekend, does she have pneumonia or walking pneumonia? Because her doctors are saying shut it down for a couple days.
Yeah, exactly. And they should shut it down, especially for her right now. So she probably has the typical walking pneumonia. In other words, the one caused by mycoplasma. If you've seen her, it's not like she's been coughing in what we call a productive cough, where you cough up sputum. At least the clips that I saw, it looked like she had a very dry cough. So you want the body to help fight that off, because like we said, it can be self-limiting as long as your immune response is good. But they also put her on antibiotics, which is great because that'll help it a little bit quicker. Also, she's contagious for a portion of this time. So you certainly don't want her to be out in big groups spreading this. So, I mean, if she had a job where she sat in an office, you know, or like you, you know, the biggest thing you could do is give it to Dave and Andrea. So, you know, if it's self-limiting, then you can take care of it yourself. But if it's not, then stay home and make sure that you get on the antibiotics and take a lot of fluids and rest.
Hey, Doc Most, so I have a question about that infecting people. If you have this, any kind of illness, and you're with these people one day, and then you're still sick the second day, there's no point in staying home because you've already infected them the first day, correct?
So wrong. She tried to sell this crap to me a week ago. No, you can infect people on the second day because you didn't infect them the first day.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. So if you missed out on your opportunity to infect everybody on day one, come back day two and three to make sure that you get the whole crew knocked out.
Fantastic. Speaking of Sandberg, who you just heard from, how's your eye twitch?
It's still there, but it's reduced because I had this twitching eye for a month coinciding with my wedding. And Doc Most sent us a list of things that could cause an eye twitch.
All right,
aren't a brain tumor or MS.
Yeah, yeah, or you can't be giveaway on the second day if you didn't get it the first day. Doc, stress, I assume?
Stress is the number one thing. just generalized overall stress. So people that are going through, you know, a wedding planning and that, yeah, that's pretty stressful. You can do that. Also, people who sit at computers for a long period of time, the eye strain gets happening and you sit there and you're focusing and you're trying to get that paper done and you're looking at the computer for a long time. Your eyes don't like to be in the same position for a long period of time. So what do? We tell you to look away from it. Focus on something further away, 20 feet away for 20 seconds, you know, 20, 20, 20. Every 20 minutes, look away from the computer and focus on something else. It allows the muscles that protect the eye and work on the eye to get a break. It's kind of like if I asked you to hold up your hand and just keep it there straight out, and I want you to hold it there for 20 minutes. After a while, it's going to start shaking because the muscles cannot continue to do that.
Oh, and your eye's a muscle.
Well, your eye has muscles around it that help it focus as well as help open and close the eyelid. But there's other.
So you're suggesting napping regularly, like every hour or so, take a nap.
Well, you do it, so I mean, and you don't have eye twitching, so
no,
it must work.
It really is. It's a legitimate medical theory. Yeah. Common sense when eye twitching is really the key, and you're not going to die.
Well, plus, but, he also said
overuse of caffeine, alcohol can cause it.
Oh, alcohol, Dave, do you have a twitch?
I do not.
All right, just checking.
Okay, but thanks for asking.
I got one other thing. This involves Sandberg's sister and Andre, who apparently had a terrible bike crash. Did you run into each other?
No, mine was first, and hers was yesterday?
Saturday morning.
And she's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you're okay.
I'm okay. I didn't break anything, thank God.
Doc, Andre has told me something I didn't know. So you got a tetanus shot.
Yeah, I wiped out by the lake. So I was, you know, I skidded along the lakefront.
She skidded all the way to North Avenue Beach. Actually fell by Navy Pier.
I can laugh about it now, but boy, it takes a lot longer these days to recoup from something like that. But yeah, my doctor gave me a tetanus shot.
And said?
That you should have a tetanus shot every 5 to 10 years.
Really?
Good for him. It's good that he did that. Hopefully he also gave you the one that protects you from pertussis as well.
But what happened?
I'm sorry, she's leaving now. She's going back to get an
X-ray. I'm going back. I wanted another shot, Doc.
So is that the DPT, though, Doc? The same one the kids get?
Correct.
Okay.
So what we found, and we'll talk about tetanus and then pertussis real quick. For tetanus, what we found is that people don't get their booster. And the booster should be every 10 years if you haven't had a break in your skin in 10 years. So if you haven't fallen off your bike, if you haven't cut yourself, if you haven't done anything like that, 10 years is okay. If you've had a break in your skin and you've had a tetanus shot within the last 5 years, you're still protected. Your immune system is ready for that. After 5 years and before 10, if you have a break in the skin, they're going to do that. You fall, you do something in the yard, you get a cut, they're going to give you that booster. People say, why? I have never heard of tetanus. It's lockjaw. No one gets that. Yes, it's in the dirt. We get it all the time. People do get it. So it's not a big deal, but it's something you can be protected from.
And pertussis is the cough.
Pertussis is whooping cough. So we thought when we were young and we got our first, immunizations, we thought, okay, that's lifelong. We aren't going to have to worry about it anymore. And if you remember, a few years ago, there was an outbreak at University of Iowa.
Yep.
And then there was another outbreak at University of Illinois. And as we started to look at it and we started doing blood tests on people, we started realizing that their pertussis immunization or strength of the response wanes as we go on. So now we really want to make sure, especially those who are going to be around seniors and young kids, when you get that booster, get the one with pertussis. It costs more, but I'm telling you, if you're going to be a grandfather like you, Steve,
right,
you know, get that because you don't want to be, you don't want to have whooping cough around a young child.
Which I did when Abigail was born. All right, now listen, all of this is important information, and we got a bunch of stuff we didn't even get to, which maybe we'll have Doc back for a bonus this week if he has the time. But the fact of the matter is, Hillary Clinton is not disqualified to be president any more than Trump's disqualified to be president. Sorry on both counts. You have given us vital information that Doc just confirmed. Get your tetanus shot.
Yeah, and wear your bike helmet. Be safe.
Andrea's wearing hers this morning.
Yes.
The bike helmet is big, and I see more and more adults riding bikes without them, and I see these young kids on skateboards without them. You know, Andrea and Mary's sister will vouch for it when they look at those helmets and think, boy, if I didn't have this on, what would have happened to my head?
True that.
What would have happened to my head? That's a phrase that pays the rest of the day.
Thanks,
Doc. Doc, thanks, buddy.
You got to talk
to me. Hold the line a second. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day.